Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the richest nation in the world when we come back. Well, how many laws did Moses give us in the Mosaic Law, and how many laws has our government given us in our secular system? Well, Moses gave us 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. Now, the state, at last count, has given us more than 2.5 million, and they're adding to that at the federal level at the rate of 47 pages a day. 47 pages a day, just adding to that law. Now, Peter said that we ought to obey God rather than men. Now, he said that in Acts 5, verse 29. And Congress has said that we ought to voluntarily apply the teachings of the Scripture in the lives of families, individuals, and societies. And they said that in Public Law 97-280. Now, our Supreme Court has said that there is a higher loyalty than loyalty to this country. That is loyalty to God, and they said that in Seeger versus United States. Now, every authority is in agreement. The Congress, the Supreme Court, and God Almighty, that the Scriptures are the final authority on law. Now, if you'd like to learn these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, and how to use them against government intrusion into your God-given rights, it's a right, it's a duty, it's an obligation that we owe to ourselves, our families, and to our society. And here at the law school, we teach these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, along with the penalties for the violation of these laws. We do that twice a year, in the spring and in the fall. So why don't you make it a point to regain your First Amendment right to free exercise this year? You know, the First Amendment is the gateway to the Second, and indeed to your whole Bill of Rights. Now, the law of God may be old, but it's not old-fashioned, and it's very relevant to our lives and very relevant to our rights today. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package. For those of you that are online, that's georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page. All right, we're talking about the richest nation in the world. I got off on this because a couple of years ago, a young woman on the Lehrer News Hour, she said, America is the richest nation in the world, and every American has a right to health care insurance. And I thought, well, now, where'd that girl learn that? Who told her that? Where'd you get that information? Could you cite that out of the Bible? Could you cite that out of the Constitution of the United States? Now, you can cite that out of the 10 Planks to the Communist Manifesto. I don't deny it, and I think that's where she got it. But she probably, if you were to ask her, where did you get that, I think she'd be stymied. But if you told her she got it from the communist philosophy of abolition of all right to property and from each according to his ability and to each according to her need, her needs, she would deny that. She'd say, oh, no, I didn't get it there. Well, where did you get it? She'd probably say, well, I got that from my civics class. I got that from our Constitution. Now, if you said, well, could you cite that to me from the Constitution? I bet you she couldn't find that with both hands at high noon or roadmap. Now, she believes it, and I don't doubt that, and she's probably very sincere, and I wouldn't doubt that. After all, sincere people are sincerely mistaken. I've done that a time or two. Sometimes you think, hey, I think I've got this one by the short hairs, and then you wake up one day and say, well, I wasn't right. That's another one I got wrong. So we have opinions. Many of us are pretty opinionated, and sometimes we've got the truth, and sometimes we think we've got the truth, and sometimes we don't have either. But let me read to you a little section of the scripture here again as it relates to wealth, because this woman, she said that America was the richest nation in the world. She said that back in 2008 while the election was on. Now, while the election was on in 2008 was when the world's great financial crisis was in progress. Do you remember that? I mean, the world's economic system was melting down right in front of her face. She said, hey, this is the richest nation in the world, and we ought to have health care insurance. President Obama agrees with her, and he gave us national health care insurance. Now, I mentioned to you what our debt structure looked like here in the United States. We owe $100 trillion as of 2008. President Obama has added to that to the tune of $29.1 trillion and promises another $1 to $1.5 trillion a year every year for the next 9 years. And that's just federal debt. Now you've got Los Angeles. They got a $222 million budget shortfall. That's the city of Los Angeles. California is billions in the red, and they've got a budget shortfall. 46 out of 48 states in the United States have budget shortfalls as I speak. Only two states in the union have balanced budgets, North Dakota being one of them, and the other one I haven't heard of yet. But I saw in the literature here the other day, two states. I don't know what the other one is, or I'd report that to you. Two. You people up in North Dakota, you're the only solvent people in the nation this year. God, can you imagine that? Now, I guess if you're not going to pay this debt back, I guess that's wealth. If you can borrow money and then not pay it back and not be foreclosed on and not lose your collateral, now that's a neat trick. I wouldn't deny that. If you can go out and borrow money, take a house and stay in it and not lose anything from it, now that's getting away with something. There was a fellow on TV here not too long ago. He went out and borrowed some $200,000 plus to buy a condominium, I believe it was, down in Miami. Well, he defaulted on the payments, and he stayed in the house for 2 years and consumed his equity. And as he was being, I think it was Paul Solman was interviewing him on Lair, and he said, I got all my equity out, and he said, now I'm going to move out of this apartment, this condominium, and I'm not going to pay anybody anything. Now, that was pretty good. Now, if you can do that and get away with it, well, you know, more power to you. Now, that's gaining real wealth. That's where borrowing and screwing people out of their money or out of their products and one thing and another, it pays off. Now, you hear up stories like that once in a while, and, you know, God love him. I admire that kind of spunk. But as a general rule, that doesn't work very well. Every year there's a million or two or 3 million houses being foreclosed on. I can't tell you exactly how many because I hear millions and millions, and I'm getting too many numbers and can't remember them all if I don't have them right in front of me. But it's, you know, a million or 2 million houses every year. Now, those million or 2 million people didn't just waltz in, borrow the money, live in the house, use up their equity, and then waltz out profit. With a profit in their pocket. These people are losing their equity. They're losing their homes. They're ending up homeless, many of them unemployed and so on, and it's a damn traumatic experience. I've been through that. I've been foreclosed on. I've lost stuff. I've been unemployed. I understand how that game is played. That's not fun. I never did enjoy it. So if any of you people out there are having a great time, write me a letter and tell me how much fun unemployment and repossession is. And while you're at it, tell me how great your divorce was, would you? I went through one of those one time. That wasn't any fun. What we're really dealing with here are penalties that come from violations of economic laws. There's 15 economic laws in the Bible. 15. There's 20 health laws, 15 agricultural laws, 15 economic laws. They run in groups or series. When you break a law, there's a penalty to pay. Now, if there's no penalty, then there's no law. And if there's no law, there's no penalty. The Apostle Paul pointed that out in Romans. Where there's no law, there's no penalty. And where there's no penalty, there's no law. Okay, so, you know, that's a push. But if you've got a law, then you have to have a penalty. So if you drive drunk, doesn't mean you're going to get caught every time you drive drunk. But, you know, when you get caught driving drunk, then you're going to have to pay a penalty. And the authorities try to make the penalty stiff enough that you won't do that anymore. That's why they call it a penal system, a penance system. You're supposed to repent and stop doing that. That's the objective behind it. All right. So take a look at this. This is Leviticus chapter 26, about the first 15 verses or so here, 13 verses. And here's what God has to say about wealth. You want to get rich, you want to have wealth, here's what he says. He says, "You shall make no idols nor graven image, and neither shall you rear up a standing image or of stone in your land to bow down unto it, because I'm the Eternal your God. You shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary, because I'm the Eternal. Now, if you walk in my statutes, and if you keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. And your threshing shall reach unto the vintage, and the vintage shall reach unto the sowing time, and you shall eat your bread to the full, and you shall dwell in your land safely. I will give you peace in the land, and you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. And I will rid evil beasts out of the land, and neither shall the sword go through your land. And you shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. Five of you shall chase 100, 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemies shall fall before you by the sword. Because I will have respect unto you, and I will make you fruitful, and multiply you, and establish my covenant with you. And you shall eat old store and bring forth the old because of the new. And I'll set my tabernacle among you, and my soul shall not abhor you. And I will walk among you, and I will be your God, and you will be my people. I am the Eternal your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt, that you should not be their bondsmen. And I have broken the bands of your yoke, and made you to go upright." Now there's the benefits. Here, that's the wealth portion. In verse 14 he says, "But if you will not hearken unto me, and will not do all of these commandments, and if you shall despise my statutes, or if your soul abhors my judgments, so that you will not do all of my commandments, but that you break my covenant, I will also do this unto you." Now, what we've got here is a contract. A covenant is an Old English word for contract. Last time I pointed out that this contract is located in Exodus 19, verse 16, through Exodus 24, 8. And under the terms and conditions of this contract over here, we're entitled to these benefits. These are called entitlements. Government gives you entitlements. And these entitlements that government gives you are given to you as a matter of law. Like your national health care insurance. You know, as a matter of law, they're going to give you these entitlements. God did the same thing. He said, "Hey, here's what I'm going to give you. Now, there's a reciprocity. Government wants you to pay them taxes and money, and they'll give you these benefits. God said, I want you to practice these laws, and if you practice these laws, I'll give you these benefits. Now, some time back, about 1933, you know, to put a date on it, we Americans decided that we weren't going to practice these laws anymore, that we wanted to make a change from the Ten Commandment model to the Ten Plank model. And we did that. So America today, as I speak, is practicing the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. And we Americans no longer practice the Ten Commandment model of economics. And of course, there's a consequence that comes from that. There's a result that occurs. And now we're seeing that result. We're seeing the result of debt. We got a lot of it. So last time I said, now let's take a look at number 7, 8, and 9. Now, there's 22 of these principles of economics that would identify the richest nation in the world. So I'm going to run through these 22 for you right here, and then I want to zero in on number 7, 8, and 9. And then I want to show you what these scriptures are, because that's exactly what God told us. He said, now, here's what I'm going to give you with specificity, and here's what I'm going to take away from you if you don't perform. You know, it's just tit for tat. That's all it boils down to. So we started off, the richest nation in the world would have no national debt. They would lend but not borrow, as we see in the scripture here in Deuteronomy 15, verse 6, and Deuteronomy 28, verse 12. We would have a positive balance of payments. Today, we're importing $800 billion a year and exporting $200 billion a year. We've got a 75% import-export imbalance. And then number three, we would have an agricultural surplus every year, as we see in Leviticus 26, verse 10. And we don't have any of the above, not the first three. Now, number four, five, and six, we would have a money with real value of 100% of its face value. And we would have healthy citizens with zero doctors and no hospitals. And we would produce more than we consume. So that would be number four, five, and six. Now, if we had money with real value of 100% of its face value, let me flip over here to Haggai 1, verse 6. Now, listen to this as it relates to the devaluation of our money. It says, you have sown much and bring in little. You eat, but you have not enough. You drink, but you are not filled with drink. You clothe you, but there is none warm. And he that earneth wages to put it into a bag with holes. That's what inflation is. Inflation is a bag with holes. That's what debt is. Debt is a bag with holes. Wage earners have not had an increase in their wages since 1973. And you've had a net decrease, and that's why your wives are all out there working in the marketplace with you. That's assuming that you've got a job, Buster. You may not even have a job. Now, we would have healthy citizens with zero doctors and zero hospitals, pursuant to Deuteronomy 28, verses 4 through 6, and under our 20 health laws that we see in Exodus 15, verse 26. God said, I'll be your healer. We said, oh, no. Mercy Medical Center is going to be our healer. We would produce more than we consume, as we see in Leviticus 26, verses 4 and 5 and verse 10. We no longer produce more than we consume. Americans are now net importers. We import $800 billion a year, and we export $200. We have a 75% deficiency in our production. We would have a budget surplus every year. We don't. We have a budget deficit every year. So, Deuteronomy 28, verses 8, and Deuteronomy 28, verses 11 and 12 come into play. We don't have that. Number eight, we would have zero inflation every year, pursuant to Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36, and Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16, but we don't have that. And we would have every home in America free and clear, as we saw in Deuteronomy 28, verse 12, but we don't have that. If we were the richest nation in the world, we would have citizens who pay cash for every purchase. If we were the richest nation in the world, we could live 3 years without any income. If we were the richest nation in the world, we would have nearly zero crime. If we were the richest nation in the world, we would have virtually no birth defects. If we were the richest nation in the world, we would lend but not borrow. If we were the richest nation in the world, we wouldn't have any banks. If we were the richest nation in the world, we wouldn't have any insurance companies. If we were the richest nation in the world, we wouldn't have any stock or bond markets. We wouldn't be dealing in any unjust weights and measures. We wouldn't have any paper money. We wouldn't have any mortgages. We wouldn't have stocks. We wouldn't have bonds. We would have gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. We would be dealing in physical property, not promises. We wouldn't have any drought if we were the richest nation in the world. We would have rain in due season. We would have no public schools. We would have limited government. And we would practice private property if we were the richest nation in the world. Now that's what we see in Leviticus 26, verses 1 through 13, and Deuteronomy 28, verses 1 through 14. I didn't dream that up. I wasn't smart enough to do that. But I was smart enough to go look it up and see, well, what did God say? What did our Creator tell us when He gave us this wealth? Now, do you call a nation with a three-day supply of food in the refrigerator rich? Do you call 2 million people locked up in prison at $64 billion a year in expense rich? Do you call a nation with a 5% birth defect rate rich? Do you call a nation that has a need to borrow $2 billion a day rich? Do you call a nation with 8,000 banks that own 90% of everything in the country wealth? Do you call a nation with all of its wealth denominated in paper rich? And do you believe that a nation with one-third of its land area involved in drought wealthy? Do you believe that a nation with hurricanes, floods, and rain out of season like Hurricane Katrina and this latest round in Nashville rich? And do you believe that a nation with the world's most expensive school system at $10,700 per child per year rich? And do you believe that a nation with an all-pervasive government rich? A nation with no private property, you call that wealth? That's what this young woman is doing. You know, she lives here in Denver, Colorado. She lives here in America just like we do. Then I'd have to ask that young woman, sweetheart, do you call a nation with a $14 trillion debt rich? A nation that has an $800 billion a year balance of payments rich? A nation with an agricultural shortage rich? A nation with a dollar that's valued at 2 cents? You know, we got a dollar here with 100 cents on the face, and it only buys 2 cents now. Is that wealth? Now, our citizens in this country are spending $5,666 per capita on health care. We spend $1.7 trillion a year on our sicknesses and our diseases. Do you believe that a family that has a $5,600 bill per person, let's multiply this out. Listen to this. You're a father, and you got a wife, and you've got four children. There's six of you in the family, and you're making the median average wealth of $50,000 a year. Now take $5,666.66 times six. That's $33,999.96. $34,000 out of your $50,000 a year is going to health care. Would you call yourself rich? Wealthy? Well-to-do? Making it just fine? Now, I don't just make up these numbers over here. $1.7 trillion a year divided by 300 million people. Do the arithmetic and see if I'm right. And I think that comes out to $5,666 a piece. Now, that's a bundle of money. It's unserviceable. Now, it's fortunate for you that you don't have to pay all of that debt. There's other people out there paying that debt. This is why the government came to the conclusion we needed socialized medicine. You people are now unable to make those kinds of payments, and so we're going to have to get the money from someplace to support that kind of infrastructure, so we're going to tax business. The other day I saw a number. Listen to this. The McDonald's Corporation said that they estimate that the health care plan is going to cost each one of their franchises $75,000 a year. Well, let's just try this one on for size. Take $75,000 a year and divide that by about 30 employees per franchise. That's about $2,500 a year. $2,500. So the insurance industry is going to sell $2,500 worth of insurance to each one of those McDonald's employees through their employer. Now, I don't know what you think about this, but I can tell you from my own personal experience. I used to have a company. I had 30 employees. I can assure you that as an employer, I would never pay 5 cents of that bill. And I don't believe for a moment that any McDonald's owner in any franchise is going to pay 5 cents on that insurance bill. I don't believe it. Now, I could be dead wrong, and maybe there's all of these McDonald's franchisees, and they're all sitting there saying, we just can't wait to provide $2,500 a year for each one of our employees to give them health care insurance because we just love them. The Caterpillar company said they thought it was going to cost them $100 million a year, $100 million. So I just took a look at the stock market. There's about 9,000 companies here on the stock market, 9,000. All of those companies are going to have to now provide this health coverage. And I looked at the McDonald's franchise. Now, I don't know what their average employee count is, but I went in one the other day, and I was counting them, and there were 14 people working in the store. 14 people in that McDonald's store at the time that I was there, standing at the counter, able to count. There could have been more, but I know there was 14. Now, these McDonald's stores are typically open from 5 or 6 in the morning until midnight or somewhere thereabouts. 11 o'clock or something like that. Now, that's more than two shifts a day. Now, I'm assuming that if they've got one shift with 14, they must have a second shift with 14. That's 28. And, of course, I didn't see the bookkeeping staff. I don't know how many bookkeepers or janitors or how many extra staff they have. So I think 30 is a pretty conservative number. 30. So if a business with 30 employees is going to have to pay $2,500 for each one of those employees, that's what the numbers work out to be, if their numbers are anywhere near correct. And then a question arises, well, where's all this money coming from? And the answer is it's coming from inflation. See, if the government came to you and said, okay, boys and girls, we're going to put a per capita tax on everybody in America. We're going to charge you all $2,500 a year. We're going to collect this $2,500 from you to buy your insurance. You'd vote those guys out of office. You wouldn't stand for that. So what they do is they come to you and they say, well, we're going to tax the rich. We're going to tax Bill Gates. We're going to tax McDonald's, Caterpillar Tractor, Dell Computer. And then they're going to pay that $2,500 a year for you. Okay? And that sounds real good. After all, McDonald's needs to pay their fair share of taxes. And Caterpillar Tractor Company needs to pay their fair share. Don't they? And Warren Buffett, George Soros, and Bill Gates can afford it, can't they? And so those of us, like the young lady in Denver, say, well, America is the richest nation in the world. I mean, we've got people like Warren Buffett, George Soros, and Bill Gates. We've got these rich people live here. Well, let me point out to you that the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and the Harrimans and so on, they live in Switzerland. And they're rich people too. Rich people live wherever they want to. Now the question arises, do these rich people pay tax? Well, stand by. Let me give you your mid-course reminder here, and we'll take a look at the rich and the corporations of America, and we'll see, do they pay their fair share? Right after this. Meanwhile, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there off of our website. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So don't blame them, blame me. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the richest nation in the world. Let me give you a wise old saying here from the world of economics. When you're doing business, do business like this. Do unto your customer that which you would have your customer do unto you. It's almost like the golden rule. Do unto your customer that which you would have your customer do to you if you were his customer. All right, now we are talking about the richest nation in the world. The richest nation in the world, according to the Bible, according to Leviticus 26, verses 1 through 13, and Deuteronomy 28, verses 1 through 14. If you take those two sections of Scripture and apply that to the richest nation in the world, it comes out to be something different than what we're actually witnessing today. That debt is not the equivalent of wealth, which is what we've all been taught. All of my life, I've been taught to leverage, borrow, use, pay the minimum. Well, I tested that, and it didn't work well for me. And after I got foreclosed on a couple of times and lost everything, I said, you know, that thing doesn't work quite as well as they told me it did when I went to school. So, some years back, I took up a new model. It's called the Ten Commandment model. It's the same model that our founding fathers planted into our Constitution back in 1787. And when our founding fathers adopted that Ten Commandment model, the United States of America took off. And between 1787 and 1933, we became the wealthiest, most powerful political, economic, and military juggernaut that the world had ever seen, surpassing Rome 10-1. Did it by 1910. But starting in 1933, we adopted a new economic model. And it's called the 10 Planks to the Communist Manifesto model. I showed you that the other day. You know, the free public education and the central bank and the heavy progressive income tax. That's three of the 10 Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Well, that's what we practice in this country. We don't practice thou shalt not steal. You shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. Yeah, we're practicing credit cards and central banking and income tax. Now, there's an outcome that comes from that, and so now we have amassed this humongous debt of about $100 billion as of 2008, and then thanks to the economic meltdown, we've added to that $29.1 trillion more. That's $129.1 trillion that we Americans owe, and they're adding to it at the rate of, your municipal corporations are adding to it, your states are adding to the debt, your federal government's adding to the debt, and hell, I'll bet you you're adding to the debt. You're putting stuff on your credit card, aren't you? Now, a question arises here, since President Obama got health care rammed through Congress, he said, this isn't going to cost you anything. When he was running for election, he said, you people that are making less than $250,000 a year, you're not going to pay a dime's worth of this tax. We're going to stick it to the rich people. We're going to stick it to the corporations. So I thought here today, maybe I ought to explain that to you. Corporations don't pay tax. McDonald's Corporation, you know that big corporation out there? Let me tell you something. McDonald's has never paid 5 cents in tax from the day they opened their doors to today, and they're not going to pay 5 cents worth of tax if they're open for another 1,000 years. Corporations don't pay tax. Now, it is true that they're there to collect the tax and to pass it on to government, but they're not there to pay it. Never have, don't now, and they ain't going to. So let's take a look at this, and let me show you how this game is being played, because you've got 9,000 public companies on the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the NASDAQ and the Russell 500 or 5,000 or something like that. These companies are out there. I mean, they're as common as pig tracks in a barnyard, but they're not paying any taxes. So let's take a look at who's really paying these taxes and who it is that's going to pay this $2,500. Because every person in America is going to pay $2,500 a year for this national health care program? Everybody. I suspect that that $2,500 is a lowball figure. I think it's going to cost something more than that. If national health care today averages $5,666 per person, I think that we're all going to pay $5,666.66 per person, which is the average. Now, the president says he's going to bring health care costs down, so that's going to be something less than $1.7 trillion, which is aiming at $2 trillion a year by 2020. Oh, I don't think so. Oh, I don't think that's going to be the case at all. When I take a look at the government's past performance, you know, the government's been managing and running the Social Security system in this country now for the last 75 years now, haven't they? And they've run it into bankruptcy three times, and it's right now spending more money than it's taking in. They just started last month, spending more than they're taking in. They've been running Medicare now since 1965, and it's bankrupt. They've been running Medicaid, and it's bankrupt. They've been running the postal system, and it's bankrupt. I want you, boys and girls, to write me an email, send me a letter, call me on the phone, and would you tell me of any governmental agency or enterprise that has ever made a profit? Can you show me one that's ever broke even, that just pays its way? Show me one. Now, the government has failed in every endeavor that it has ever undertaken. And they have failed every time they've undertaken it. Now, what in the hell makes you think that they can take on the biggest business in the country and run it profitably? Healthcare. Now, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt, and I'm going to say, yep, they're going to take it over, and they're going to run it, and they're going to run it just like the healthcare system's been run. Well, that costs $1.7 trillion. Divide that by 300 million, and I think it comes out to 56,66,66. I think this $2,500 number is a lowball number. I think it's going to cost you double that, maybe triple. And McDonald's ain't paying a dime of it, neither is Caterpillar Tractor, and neither is Bill Gates, George Soros, or Warren Buffett. But I'll tell you who's going to pay for it, and that's going to be you and me, partner. You and me, we're going to pay for all of it, every damn dime. Now, when I moved up to Idaho back in 1972, there was a brouhaha going on up there over Idaho Power Company. Now, this is a microcosm. This is an easy state to follow because Idaho's got less than a million people in it, has a pretty good-sized piece of real estate, and the biggest enterprise in the state is the power company. It's called Idaho Power. They were incorporated by the state legislature in 1911. And in 1972, when I moved up there, there was a piece in the paper, you know, every week, in Idaho Power Company, and then there was letters to the editors, then Idaho Power would take out a two-page ad, you know, in the Sunday paper and say, Idaho Power Company is a good neighbor, we pay our fair share, don't raise taxes on Idaho Power Company. And then you'd have pieces by legislators and the governor, and they'd say, Idaho Power Company ain't paying their fair share. They got to pay like everybody else, and blah, blah, blah. And so this went on back and forth, you know, for a couple, 3 months. And then one day the legislature took a vote, and they voted to raise Idaho Power Company's tax. And then Idaho Power Company took out a big two-page ad, cost $8,000 a page now. And took out this big $16,000 ad and said, well, Idaho Power is a good neighbor, and the legislature has spoken, and we want to be good neighbors, and we'll pay the tax and shut up. And so between 1972 and 1984, I didn't hear much more about it. And then about 1983-84, they started talking again in the legislature about Idaho Power Company ain't paying their fair share, and so we need to raise their taxes. And so another big round of political popularity got underway. And I mean, people are elected or defeated for office depending upon their stand on taxing Idaho Power Company. I mean, you know, people get excited about politics. So the upshot of it was, when it was all said and done, they voted to raise Idaho Power Company's tax. Now, at the time, I was running a little company up there called Barrister's Inn, little law school up there, and so I was kind of interested in this, and so every day I would read legal notices in the paper. I was reading the legal sections of more than one paper, and so one day I'm reading the Idaho Statesman, page 27, legal notices section. On the right-hand page, on the far outside column, about 4 or 5 little notices up from the bottom, was a little small legal notice. Wasn't very big, just a little small legal notice. And it said, in effect, the Idaho Power Company has petitioned the Public Utility Commission for a rate increase of 3 point, and then they carried it out 4 decimal places. Now, you know, I'm a businessman, and I can see the need to raise prices, but I wouldn't raise prices 3%. If I was going to raise prices, I'd raise them 5% or 10%. Now, I could see raising prices by 3%, but the thing that caught my interest was 3.3726%. I mean, it's broken down to 4 decimal places. That's like a mill levy. That's getting down to the nitty-gritty. It would make sense if they wanted to raise prices by 2% or 3% or 4% or 5%, but what's this 3.3742%? And right away I said there's something wrong with this. I don't know what it is. I don't understand it, but there's something screwy here. It just doesn't make common sense. It doesn't make business sense. And I talked to some of my associates, and so at one of our Tuesday meetings, somebody suggested, well, why don't you go down and get the Idaho Company or the Idaho Power Company charter from the Secretary of State. His name was Pete Senarusa in those days. So I went down to Pete's office and I said, hey, Pete, give me a copy of the Idaho Power Company charter. It cost me $5. You just paid a $5 fee and they go copy it off, about 18 pages, as I recall. Took it back to my office. I sat down and read it. And it was very, very revelatory. I didn't know how this corporation was set up. In fact, I didn't know too much about corporate business to start with, so I was getting an education at the same time. And here's how this thing works out. Idaho Power Company, they make an 8% profit per year. They don't make, 25% this year. They're not like Exxon. When the price of oil goes up, they make big profits, or like Goldman Sachs, and then if they have a bad year, it goes down. Idaho Power Company never has a bad year. They never have an outstanding year either. They just have an absolutely flat, exactly the same every year, year in and year out profit. And it's 8% of their invested capital. That's the way they compute their profit. So if Idaho Power Company has $1 million worth of poles and lines and transformers, they make $80,000 a year net profit. And that's bottom line every year. They never make a dime more and they never make a dime less. And I thought, well, now that's really interesting, because that tells us the answer to the riddle. So they're getting paid not based upon how much electricity they sell or how scarce the electricity is. There isn't anything about the marketplace that comes into play. They just get 8% of their invested capital paid back to them every year. It's like putting $1,000 in the bank and the bank pays 8%. That's the end of the argument. You get $80 a year and that's it. Which isn't too bad. 80% compounded annually, for X number of years is a pretty good payback. Well, anyway, I took those numbers and I sat down and I said, okay, now I can see what happened here. you see, Idaho Power Company, or the tax is going to be raised on Idaho Power Company, and they have to make 8%. So in order to make 8%, they have to raise their rates by 3.3742% to make that 8%. If they miscalculate and they make more than 8% of their invested capital, then what they have to do is give a refund to all of the ratepayers. Yeah, they got to give a rate refund to all the ratepayers. Or if they make less than their 8%, say they made only 7.5%, then they have a rate increase to make up that loss, so that they're always making exactly 8%, never more, never less. That's what the law prescribes. So if the Idaho legislature came to you and said, we're going to raise your taxes this year, Joe, by $50 a year or $60 a year, see, you'd come unhinged. You'd vote that sucker out of office. So the legislators, that is the politicians and the business interests, that is General Motors and IBM and General Electric, these people aren't dumb. They're not dumb, and they work together. This is a ruse. These $16,000 ads that Idaho Power Company is taking out says, don't raise Idaho Power Company's tax, is as phony as a $3 Federal Reserve note. Idaho Power Company never had to spend a dime, never had to argue, never had to do jack squat. That's a part of the public relations effort on both the part of the legislature. Makes the legislature look good. We're making this big entity over here pay their fair share. So here's what happens. Idaho Power Company raises your rates by $5 a month, $60 a year, and they collect the money from you and pay it over to the government. Idaho Power Company is always going to make 8%, period. It's the end of the report. Idaho Power Company doesn't pay tax. They're simply a public entity that collects the tax from you and passes it on to the government. They're an agent, just like little Georgie carrying the bread and milk home. Don't have anything to do with it. Little Georgie's going to get breakfast, lunch, and dinner and get his clothes washed and all the benefits that go with being an agent, being a child. Now let's go back here to McDonald's. McDonald's is a public corporation, nice guys that they are, and they sell meat and potatoes. And when government wants to give you a $1 trillion program like healthcare, if they come to you and say, okay, to pay for this, we got to charge you $2,500, and you have to cut that check for $2,500, listen, Joe, you're going to come unhinged. And the politicians all know that. They're not dumb. So what they do is they come to you and they say, now, Joe, look, let's tax George Soros. Let's tax Bill Gates. Let's tax McDonald's and Caterpillar Tractor and make them pay their fair share. And that's what you want to hear, Joe, and that's what they're telling you. And then you bought it. You said, well, that sounds like a good plan to me. Let's make Caterpillar and General Electric and all those guys pay their fair share. Now, when you raise this tax on Caterpillar, Caterpillar is going to raise the price of their Caterpillar tractors from $2 million a unit to $2,100,000 a unit. That's all. And then $50,000 of that they're going to pay over to the government, and then they're going to keep the other 50 for themselves. The corporations actually make a profit off of this because they're going to charge more than their actual costs. I mean, after all, they got to administer this. This is another layer of bureaucracy and red tape. So the corporations and the government act as partners in a conspiracy to deprive you of your revenue. So here's what'll happen. McDonald's is going to raise the price of their French fries by a dime a bag, and the price of their soda pop by a nickel, and the price of their hamburger by 3 or 5 cents, or whatever it takes. Now, yesterday when you went in and you checked out of McDonald's, it was, $9.40. And the next time that you go in there, it's going to be $9.85. That's all. And so you're saying, well, it's only a quarter. And it's just a part of inflation. Listen, inflation is called the stealth tax. Stealth tax. And there are 247 of these stealth taxes on a McDonald's Big Mac? Big Mac. 247 taxes on that. And that $1.39 that you're paying for that Big Mac out there, that's really a 5-cent hamburger, which is the price of a hamburger in 1933. Hamburgers in 1933 were a nickel. The $1.34 that you're paying now are simply the taxes that go on it. That's all. They're just adding it on. And you're going to pay it. But instead of cutting them a check for $2,500, they're going to nickel